Through the facilities of the Broadcasting Foundation of America, Radio Nederland presents Flashback in History.
The peat was not for burning. No, the peat was not for burning. Or was it? It all depends on how you look at it. In former centuries, the Dutch used to buy squares of peat to burn in their stoves. It was cut in small blocks from the top layer of the peat moors in the east of the country. Of course, it was the cheapest fuel to be had, but there was always plenty of supply. At least that is what one Spanish garrison of the occupation forces in the Netherlands thought some four centuries ago. February 1590.
Any more checking, Corporal?
No, thank you, Skipper. I've seen enough. Your old barge is grand with peat, and that's the stuff we badly need in this rotten Dutch climate. Hey, what's behind this partition?
Peat, Corporal. Stacks of peat. Or do you think that that's where I kept my brandy?
Should the Spanish corporal really have investigated what was behind that partition and at the bottom of the barge, he wouldn't have found any peat. And no brandy either. Just Dutch soldiers. The war had begun in 1568, although long before that there had been some friction between Dutch nobility and King Philip II, who ruled over the Low Countries from Spain. The Spanish occupiers made themselves ever more hated here by increasing their power, by suppressing and exploiting the population, and especially by their terrible persecution and maltreatment of the non-Catholics. There was no religious freedom, and many militant Protestants were taken prisoners and very often executed. Efforts were made to induce the Spaniards to conduct a milder regime. The Dutch nobility submitted a petition to Duchess Margaret of Parma, the Spanish governors of the country, in which a request was made to put a stop to the persecution of the Protestants, but all in vain. Then came the sad year of 1566, a year of famine, because the crops failed and there were difficulties in the supply of cereals, and yet the Dutch had to continue paying the heavy taxes. The tension between Spaniards and Dutchmen reached a climax, and in July of that year, the mood of despair of the rebelling population discharged in a mass attack on Roman Catholic property, destroying churches and convents. To restore peace and order, King Philip II sent one of his toughest and most callous army commanders to the rebelling Netherlands, the Duke of Alva. Alva had just returned from a successful campaign against the German Protestants. So when he started his activities in 1566 in Holland, thousands of people fled from the country. He brought a wave of terror over the Low Countries. Yet he didn't succeed in dispelling the fear and unrest. On the contrary, his ruthless and cruel action fanned the flame of insurgents. Even Margaret of Parma couldn't accept his hard-heartedness, and she resigned from her post. Alva was appointed in her place. It was he who, in 1568, ordered the decapitation of two excellent Dutchmen, the Count of Egmont and the Count of Hoorn. And that was the signal for the general uprising, which started with a fierce battle in the north of the country. It was the beginning of a war of independence, which was to last for 80 years. February 1590. The war had been on for more than 20 years now, with alternating successes. At his castle at Vourne, Prince Maurice of Orange, commander-in-chief of the rebels, received a visitor, a barge skipper.
Your Highness, I have taken the liberty to disturb you because I want to submit a plan to you. It may be a rather daring plan, but I have good hopes that it will be successful. You see, I happen to be the skipper of a peat barge sailing regularly to Breda to deliver peat for the garrison there. And the Spanish guards know me so well by now that my ship is hardly checked anymore. So if I were to hide some, say, 80 Dutch soldiers under a thin load of peat, I could quite safely smuggle them inside the city walls. And then if you could launch an attack on the city at the same time, the Spanish garrison could easily be overpowered.
Prince Maurice thought this was an excellent idea, and with the utmost care, the preparation of the double attack was immediately taken in hand. The fighting between Spaniards and Dutch forces at that time concentrated around the major garrison cities, which, like walled-in islands, were scattered all over the Low Countries. It was not the kind of war in which large areas were conquered. At times, the attacking party had to lay siege to a town for months on end before the beleaguered fortress had to yield to the force of arms, or to famine. During such a siege, the use of the most horrible means was definitely not shunned. After all, war is war. And even then, war was unworthy of men.
I'm getting worried, Captain.
Yes, they're taking a long time. We were to embark here at 11, and now it's almost midnight.
You don't suppose there's anything wrong with the skipper, do you?
No. Oh, you mean betrayal.
Captain?
Who goes there?
It's me, Skipper van Bergen.
Thank heavens. You're late, Skipper.
Yes, I know, Captain, and I'm afraid I have bad news for you. We can't sail. The wind is blowing from the wrong quarter.
Well, that was an ill beginning of the venture. However, a few days later, the wind was favorable again, and as quietly as possible, some 70 soldiers disappeared into the barge's hold.
Have you counted your men, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir. Everything's in order.
Good. Well, Skipper, I'm also going down the hatch. You know what's at stake. Use your own discretion, and if possible, keep me informed.
On Thursday evening, at 11 o'clock, the journey had begun. At 3 p.m. on Saturday, the barge lay before the fortress of Breda.
Captain?
Yes?
We're right up to the water gate. This is where the danger comes in. The Spaniard's inspection craft is on its way. For God's sake, keep still, all of you.
All right, Skipper. You've heard it, men. This is it. Not a sound from any of you. You heard me. I said not a sound.
If they find us, we're done for. They'll cut our throats.
It was midwinter and bitterly cold. The Spanish garrison was in dire need of Skipper van Bergen's peat.
Hello, Skipper. We had expected you much sooner than this.
I'm sorry, Corporal, but we were windbound. Any more checking, Corporal?
No, thank you, Skipper. I've seen enough. Your old barge is grand with peat, and that's the stuff we badly need in this rotten Dutch climate. Hey, what's behind this partition?
Peat, Corporal. Stacks of peat. Or do you think that that's where I kept my brandy?
I wish it were. Well, it's okay, Skipper. You can proceed.
The danger was past. Everything looked quite safe. But a few minutes later, the skipper was faced with a piece of bad luck which threatened to wreck the whole venture. When the barge entered the city, the strong wind unexpectedly increased its speed, while the many ice floes in the river made the ship less navigable. And when, in addition, the skipper's deckhand made a wrong maneuver, the barge ran aground with a loud crash. And worst of all, one of the soldiers in the hold made an almost disastrous discovery.
We sprang a leak. The ship's making water.
For one moment it looked as if the soldiers would panic and ram the partition. But the captain managed to calm his men. And Skipper von Bergen realized there was only one thing to do to keep the situation in hand. Bumping. Bumping like mad. Meanwhile, the grounded peat barge had drawn the attention of the Spaniards, and when they saw that the long-coveted fuel threatened to sink in the river under their very eyes, one of their officers ordered a ship to be pulled loose. They worked and toiled with might and main, and with success, for a little while later, oh irony, the soldiers of the Dutch prince were towed into the city by the Spaniards themselves.
Long now, my boy. I know you're in a bad way. Please try and hold on a little longer.
Down in the hold, the soldiers stood knee-deep in the ice-cold water. One of them was in a bad shape. He ran a fever and coughed incessantly. Fortunately, the noise of the pump considerably reduced the chance of being heard by the Spaniards.
Skipper, we'll start right away unloading the peat. For if we wait until tomorrow, everything will be soaking wet.
Well, that implied again danger. Three men began taking the squares of peat in large baskets to the shore. And Skipper von Bergen was horrified at the idea that even before dusk, they would want to tackle the load stacked behind a partition. He waited and told his deckhand to keep on pumping. And when he knew the crucial moment had arrived, he went to the Spaniards and said,
"All right, men, you've done a good job so far. We're getting along nicely, so I should say let's do the rest tomorrow, eh? And there are festivities in town tonight, so all your drinks are on meat."
The trick worked. Almost singing for joy, the men disappeared. But one remained on board. The guard made no show of complying with the skipper's suggestion.
"Well, guard, don't you feel like having some fun?"
"Why, I'd like to, but I'm not allowed to leave my post."
"Can't you do anything about it?"
"No, skipper, I'm afraid not."
The situation in the hold became almost untenable. The water had again risen. The sound of coughing could hardly be disguised. And there was a tension of uncertainty because no one knew exactly what was happening overhead on deck. The men heard footsteps and vague voices, and they heard the squeaking of the pump.
"That's not easy going. Or is it, skipper, that pumping?"
"Oh, it might be worse."
"But why did you dismiss your deckhand then?"
"Well, he's had a tough trip, and I thought he should have some fun."
"I see. Well, I'd better go down and have a look for myself." Hey, what's that? What's that? I thought I heard someone cough."
"Oh, that's probably one of the cats. Those animals also catch colds down there in the hold."
"Yes, I guess so. Well, I'll be right back."
No sooner had the guard taken to his heels than the skipper abandoned his pump.
"Captain? Captain?"
"Yes?"
"The coast is clear. My deckhand left more than an hour ago, so he must be with the prince at the moment. You'll have to do some quick acting."
The rest went off in a miraculous and smooth way. The soldiers of the Prince of Orange split up into two groups. One occupied the arsenal, and the other overpowered the guardhouse. In the feasting city, the rapid and energetic action of the insurgents created complete chaos and confusion. And when the prince's other forces also marched into the town, there was hardly any Spanish resistance left. By means of this trick, the Breda fortress and garrison fell into the prince's hands practically without any losses. The conquest of Breda constituted a considerable moral support for the Dutch freedom fighters. Shortly afterwards, they conquered 9 more towns. However, the struggle against the Spaniards was to continue for more than 50 years. The end of the 80-year war came in 1648. At the Peace of Munster, it was established that the Netherlands would no longer form part of the Spanish Empire, but that they would be independent, free and self-supporting, under the guidance of the House of Orange.
The Peat Was Not for Burning was a program in the series Flashback in History, written by Gabri de Wacht and produced by Pim van Manen.
Those taking part were Emiel van Dulken, Derek Jordan, Jerry Cowan, Theo de Boer, Joop Segers, and John van der Steen, with the technical assistance of Jerry de Ruijch. The music by Hugo Godron was played by the Radio Chamber Orchestra under Roelof Krol.
This was a production of Radio Nederland in Hilversum, Holland, and came to you through the facilities of the Broadcasting Foundation of America.